And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Hold That Podcast podcast. Brody, how are you? I know you had a interesting weekend. It is the first LSU game you haven't attended in how long? I know the pandemic didn't help with that. How long has it been since you didn't watch an LSU game live?
Exactly, yeah, because I was going to say, I didn't go to all the road games last year, but even then, I'm still like very much locked in covering the game. So it's the first home game I have not, first home game I haven't been to, and first game I haven't like covered in some way in 4 years, since 2017 when I was still in Mississippi. So yeah, it was a weird experience. And granted, half the wedding was like Louisiana people. So everybody's checking with me because they know I'm a sports writer, just being like this, you know, this like 65-year-old Uncle Phil just being like, I need a score update. And I'm just like, I don't know, man. I'm trying to enjoy myself and not get yelled at. But I got, so it was a weird thing of like trying to keep up on Twitter while also very much not trying to be the guy catching up on Twitter. But luckily, because I think I had this fear in the back of my head, and I think we joked about it on the show last week, that like, man, my number, not that like I care who wins or loses a game, you know, blah, 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 but like, if they would have lost Central Michigan when I was gone, that would have been a very bad look for me.
It is a seismic moment that you would have missed.
Yes, well put. Yeah. So I'm kind of like, I was inherently rooting for LSU. I will tell you guys that right now. So it was good to see them kind of run away with that. And so, yeah, then bounce back to you. It seems like LSU, and obviously I've rewatched the entire game like one or two times now, so I know what happened. But throwing it back to you, it seems like they fixed some pretty major issues on offense, or at least addressed them. What was your reaction?
Yes and no. Like, I'll say this. The game was a lot of fun. It was, you know, for everything the McNeese game wasn't, you know, we'd like to say that the McNeese game, yes, it was 34-7, but it was just kind of a drag all around. It never felt like cool things were happening or that LSU was flexing muscle in any part of the game. This was totally different. I was very pleased with that. You wrote a story on this three freshmen, Deion Smith, Jack Besh, and Corey Kiner, who were awesome. It was really fun seeing our guys Moss people. Like, the Deion Smith catch was like, it was one of those where I was like literally yelped in the stands. Because
which one? Shit.
The one in the end zone.
It was like, okay, because I mean that one on the sideline was like arguably even more absurd. I mean, yeah, he was fantastic.
I know, but it really jolted the crowd, which was a little thin, but yeah. It's fine. It was a fun game. I just had this whole thing in the back of my mind that we can dive into later, that none of this stuff is gonna fly like next week. Like I don't know. I had this feeling, and maybe that is a pessimist in me, that the start of this year has hurt me, and that I don't want to like be like, all right, back. LSU's back, baby. Like, I just don't feel that yet. I need to see it against a good team. And I know that Central Michigan is a pretty decent G5 team, but I don't know. I didn't come away being like, all right, it's going to be 31-0 next week and we're rolling. I didn't feel that way.
No, that's valid. And I think, I think if anything, I'm in a slightly more positive spot than you. So look at us role reversing. But yeah, I think it's not that what I think this team is capable was changed or like some major shift. I think I leave that game though. And you're absolutely right. I want to preface that. Like, this is not telling you much about this team. It isn't like showing anything special. It is Central Michigan at the end of the day. They should win this game handily. But I think it's just, it was starting to look really bleak. Like, I think that's why that's why you are where you are, and maybe healthily so, is that you weren't as bleak as I was last week, but it was looking bleak, that like this offense doesn't even look like it will be able to do much against Central Michigan. That's kind of how it looked to me. So I'm at least at a point of, all right, it looked like LSU really at least addressed some major flaws in a major way. And I think that is relevant. Do I know if it's going to work against other teams? No, and we'll get to that later. We'll get to that in a second. But I think there is relevance in, okay, they genuinely seem like they address the tempo stuff. And some of that's like that awkward thing of like, oh wow, you learned to do tempo, how amazing. But it opened things up in a very real way. And like, you could see the differences in some of those deep shots downfield, the differences in how it kind of opened up things for the run game, all that. I did see that. And granted, some of it's just they were playing more man than the first two opponents did, but you did see openings downfield, all that kind of stuff. You saw Johnson just look more and more comfortable, all that. So I do think there's things that, again, I'm not changing my mind that suddenly I think this team's going 9-3 again, but I do have more confidence that Mississippi State feels like a pretty even football game, for example, or I do think they can win some other games. So I'm not as panicked about this team, but I'm not like convinced either.
So I'm looking at some stats. Mississippi State.
Hit me up with the stats.
Mississippi State does not have a great pass defense. I don't know if you knew that. So I guess, I don't know. I feel like Max threw a lot of one-on-one balls, and you're right. They played a lot more man coverage, which clearly helps LSU's receivers. That is a very young but talented room, but like, put them one-on-one and Deion Smith is going to reach over you and grab something. Kayshawn is going to do that. You know, all those guys are capable of doing that stuff. Now, I know it's hard with a small sample size and 2 to 3 games. State has played 2 games. But, I guess I'm just so fascinated to see what they look like this weekend because, A, I think it will be obviously the only time they play a decent team since week one. It is a true test of progress. I mean, we can even see now I'm dovetailing with my negativity again. Because can we discuss UCLA's game this weekend just for a brief moment?
So I'm struggling with this. And granted, I didn't get to watch the game fully, so I don't fully know. But obviously, this is changing how we're going to think about UCLA. I'm not that naive. Like, it is. Like, but I have a hard time with this. And it's something I struggle with a lot. That it's like, week one is its own thing. It just is. Like, it's not who either team really is. And there's only going to be certain teams are going to have certain advantages, all that kind of stuff. So, like, I never overreact to week one. If anything, I think I reacted more strongly to the McNeese performance than I did the UCLA game. But it's tricky because Fresno State is a
team.
Pretty good football
They're
team.
They're good.
Like, and this is where you're gonna laugh at me, but their head coach is Kalen DeBoer, who is the guy who got Indiana's offense rolling for that 8-4 season.
Homer alert! Jeez,
I know, right? In that 2019 campaign, and he got Fresno State rolling pretty fast now, and you know he almost beat Oregon and all that, who then obviously whooped Ohio State. And these things aren't like I hate that transitive property nonsense, but you know it just proves to you like Fresno State's quality. So I'm not looking at that loss as like, wow, UCLA isn't a good win or anything like that. Because you know what? Sometimes it's just what you see in front of you, man. And UCLA looked like a really good football team against LSU. And they exposed a lot of problems. And now it seems like LSU is addressing them. So it's probably somewhere in the middle, which is where my boring mind works. But it is tricky now. Because at least say if you are an optimist and you thought LSU was going to rebound and all that stuff, your rankings and all of that, you could like hedge it to like, yeah, but UCLA is a good loss and all that. And
right.
Yeah, that does. Like, it loses that luster.
The narrative after the game, for however bummed I was, that I was like, okay, well, maybe UCLA really is a Pac-12 dark horse. Like, maybe they can win this conference. And like, they still could, to be honest. The Pac-12 seems like
I was just
kind of
say
a mess.
That, yeah.
But losing to, even if it's a really good G5 team, isn't the best if we are looking back and reassessing things. But LSU has everything in front of them. I guess I'm just like, I'm trying to get myself there where I am like all hyped up and I think we're going to kick ass. And I'm not there yet. I'm just not there. But I will say this weekend was a delight.
So, yeah, because I don't even want to get to Mississippi State. I do want to talk about this game in a little more depth.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the jump away has to be, and you mentioned it yourself, the freshman. And it's not just that young players look good, because that happens every year. And normally it's its own thing of like, oh, wow, that's pretty good. Like, hey, this young guy's coming along, like a BJ Ojulari last year
right,
or something like
right.
that. It's like, nice. This felt a little different in the sense that it's three freshmen, and they're not the only three, may I add, but three offensive freshmen who are coming up and addressing actual problems. And I think that's where you can actually get a little excited. And by the way, for Deion Smith, for example, it's one game. I'm not sure Deion Smith is going to be this guy week to week or anything like that. I do kind of think Jack Besh is that guy week to week. I do kind of think Corey Kiner might be that guy week to week. But anyway, the point is LSU had big questions. All right, start at running back. John Emery's ineligible still, and we'll see what's going to happen with that this week. I think they're hoping to get an answer in the next few days.
Yeah,
still.
Yeah. Can you give me a brief update, or if any? Like,
not too much yet. As of now, you know, his attorney's still saying, you know, I think he'll know more by Wednesday, and we're recording this on Tuesday. But, yeah, he is hopeful he can get some kind of, you know, decision made by this week.
They want him to be eligible this weekend, right? Like, that was the goal.
They are still trying for that, correct. Okay. Yeah. But still, it's just, I think they don't know anything yet. So yeah, John Emery's out. And then Ty Davis Price, somebody who I've always defended as just the definition of reliable and all that. He's going to get your yards. Again, I'm the least critical person I know. It's just not working out. He is averaging, I think, 3 or below yards per carry. And it's his style. It's great if you have a solid offensive line, yep. Or even like an average one where it's like, man, just take your yards and get it. That's great. But they don't have the offensive line. That is just the reality, and I think we're at the point where you just need to accept that is the truth, and that will be the truth going forward.
I will tell you the flash that showed me this was in the game on Saturday, and I know the offensive line did a little better, but still, they weren't running the ball fantastically. But that last touchdown run from Corey Kiner, where he looked like Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the backfield, which, let's focus on that, he had a tackler in the backfield, and he spun him out, made him look stupid, and ran into the end zone for a touchdown. I don't think Ty Davis Price is doing that. Ty Davis Price gets ahead of steam downfield, and he is running you over. And, you know, I was remembering that touchdown run they had against Florida in 2019, where it's just straight downhill, and oh my God, he's great gone. Run. Wow, yeah. holy cow, he's gone. And Kiner is like, I don't know, a little shiftier. Maybe that's what we need a little more. I mean, he has really popped in his time in these garbage games. So I am kind of hoping he's out there on the first series. I mean, no slight to Ty Davis Price, but maybe Kiner just fits a little better into the scheme right now.
Yeah, no, I think you put that just perfectly. Is that it's not? Yeah, it's the idea that his best plays still weren't the O-line giving him much, and it's not even just about, because Armani Goodwin brings that same thing, mm-hmm. really just like create some dynamic playmaking. But it's not just about guy in the backfield now making a miss and I'm going for a big run. I think the thing that sold me on being like, hey, I actually think he should start now, and I'm so not reactionary like that, is it was actually for me more about the plays where it was just kind of, you know, just a stale, not much there, but not like blown up plays, where he still just hit the hole fast.
Yeah.
Wasn't that he like was powerful, even though he is. It was that he just got to the hole quicker than Davis Price does, and he turned those should be a 1 yard runs into like 4 yarders. And it wasn't that he did some cool move to create 4 yards. He just got there faster and moved it forward for 3 or 4 yards. And I know that sounds one of those like, no shit, Sherlock things, but that is the difference, I think, is that it's not even just the playmaking. It's that simplicity of being more explosive. And I think that's what kind of sold me. It's, hey, he's not just a playmaker. He's actually going to help you better on a play-by-play basis. So I really did believe that. And still, again, our wonderful caveat, very small sample size, 12 carries. But I really think that matters. So the idea of having him, and then you get Armani Goodwin back, and from what I understand, they still did not get a Trey Bradford decision before the game, yes or no, so they're still hoping he can come back soon, you know, so he might be available, and then who knows what's happening with John Emery. I don't know who the starter is going to be in reality, but just the idea of getting some dynamic playmaking is so essential there.
Can you write a book on the running back room in the first 3 weeks, like, after the season? Like,
shit. You're not wrong, man. I mean, because obviously the Kevin Faulk tragedy and our thoughts are with him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then John Emery. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. This is a pretty wild room. And then to move on to receiver / tight end, if we want to do that. Like, again, receiver is always going to be fine. I don't think any of us were like receivers in trouble, but we've been talking for 6 months now about who in the world will be the second guy. Like, you know, Kayshon Boutte is the guy. He's a star, but like, there's a lot of talent 2 through 8, but who's the guy? Who will be the guy Johnson can trust? And again, I'm not saying Deion Smith is, but that was huge. And it wasn't even just that he made the plays. It was something about the way Johnson, like, from that first snap, felt comfortable just attacking in a way he hadn't looked comfortable. And just saying, like, I see Deion Smith, I'm throwing to Deion Smith. That is something. So that's huge. And Jack Besh, tight end, obviously he's not really a tight end, but still, him becoming that guy who, it's not like he's like Deion Smith or something, but he's just become that safety blanket guy. It's like, whenever it's like 3rd and 9, they get him to him for 6 yards and then he takes it for 12, you know, that is essential. You get him those like play actions into the flat.
He's a mismatch guy, man. You put a linebacker on him and he's burning by him, even though he looks like a tight end. And like, I don't know. I really like him. And he popped a couple times in the UCLA game early. I remember a couple of nice little crossing routes that Max hit him on. So I'm a big Jack Besh fan. I thought that.
And then
he had
winning
a great
that
one
on one with the one on one with the one handed catch was any other game. That's the number one highlight, and it was like the fourth. But I mean, so yeah, I think Besh is. I mean, again, Deion Smith had like the more exciting day, and who knows, Besh might be better over time. But I mean, Smith might be better over time. But Besh right now is LSU's second best skill player. Like I actually feel confident saying that. Like he is the most reliable. He can win deep balls. He's the matchup guy. Like again, that sounds crazy, but I believe it. And you know what he also did? I noticed all because the first half of that game, he really killed them with those like we said, those short passes. And it was, they'd be in zone, and he was like their zone breaker. He was the guy who they would be in zone, and then all of a sudden, Johnson would immediately recognize that and then immediately hit him in that slot for like 6 yards. Like, and that's another trust thing that matters. It's like he knows the second he sees a certain coverage, he was going to him. And again, I just think that really matters. So it's not about, oh man, freshmen look good. And shoot, Ogeron went as far as saying this might be the most talented freshman class he's had yet, which is saying something. But it's just the idea that they all stepped up in the exact spots LSU was desperate for somebody.
Right. All right. You might be talking to me. I might be stepping a couple steps back from
the
ledge.
Doing it against the SEC will be different.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Okay, let's do a nice transition there because I feel like there's this weird dichotomy in my brain where LSU still feels like they might be bad after they kind of hurt me in week one. But the SEC kind of seems like a mess. I mean, do you agree?
I don't know yet. And I know that's because I think A&M is still better than like that Colorado game looked. And by the way, I don't think Colorado is particularly
bad. I don't know, Big Dog. I don't know.
So what I was going to say. Mr. Pain in the Ass is
me.
is that I think this weekend's going to tell us so much across the SEC. Obviously, it's the first like real week of SEC play for most of the SEC, and it's Arkansas versus A&M. I think we're going to learn a lot there, and because A&M is like, I mean, Arkansas is like everybody's team in America right now, right? And everyone loves them. By the way, I love them. Shoot. I mean, I had money on them against Texas that day. But I do feel like I think A&M's a 5-point favorite. I feel like this reeks of one of those games where like A&M reminds you that there is a gap still, like just in terms of overall ability and all that. It feels like that to me. I kind of think A&M, and also Calzada, I believe is his name. I believe, you know, that he was thrown into that Colorado game, and I think he showed last week against New Mexico like some much more explosive abilities in the game. So I have a gut feeling A&M routes this one. That's either way, your point still stands. But like whoever wins that game, we're going to feel pretty good about. Like we're going to feel really good about that. We're going to feel Tennessee, Florida is probably going to tell us something like if Florida's legit. And then the question is, I guess, where do you stand on Penn State, Auburn last week? Where do you leave that game thinking Auburn's just not that good? I don't know. You tell me.
No, I actually thought Auburn showed out a little more than I thought they would. Okay, I thought they would be a little intimidated with – as a new coach. They've kind of had a mess of an offseason with COVID stuff, and Harsin might have had some disconnects with the boosters there, and it just seems like they were a little disorganized. And then to be within a fade call on fourth and goal of possibly tying a game in a whiteout in Happy Valley a little scary for me as an LSU fan that they
because you kind of looked at that as like an assumed win when the season started
for Auburn.
LSU, no, I'm saying I'm sorry. as an LSU fan, before the season, you kind of thought Auburn, before we knew what happened with UCLA, you kind of thought, and so did I, that LSU would beat Auburn. Like, that's a win at home.
Yes.
And I guess you're probably not feeling as confident now.
I mean, all right, the two sides of my brain, unbiased, says, yes, a little scary that Auburn showed that much against a Penn State team that has proven itself to be pretty good already this year. Two really good wins, probably two better wins than a lot of people in the country have right now. So, yes, a little worrisome. B, I have always been the biggest Bo Nix hater on the planet. I don't think he's good. Like, he has never impressed me. And I know that he has the Bama game from 2019. And, of course, I was rooting for them then because I did not want to see Alabama anywhere near a playoff ranking.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's good. And I don't think he's made – and I'm not even counting LSU last year. That was a lost year, lost game, and maybe that's stupid of me. I just don't think he's that good of a quarterback. So –
No, I can't. I was a Bo Nix defender for 2 years, and I'm officially just like, yeah, it's just not it. It's okay.
It's over. It's over. So, look, it's going to be way different if LSU has a good showing this weekend, and then it's 8 p.m., Death Valley. I mean, a full stadium for the first time in 2 years, probably. I don't know. I think LSU has a lot of stuff going its way. But let's get through this weekend first. Also, I would like to do – I was doing some multitasking in the background because – you said that A&M looked good against New Mexico. New Mexico's garbage.
No, I'm not saying like that's an impressive win. I just meant like, hey, the quarterback, you know, like he was throwing to Colorado. At least he showed like he can run an offense explosive. Like that's all I meant. I didn't mean like, wow, that really told me he's the guy. I just meant like, all right, the Colorado game might not be exactly what he is.
All right, here's the Chris Branch report. Out on Bo Nix forever. Out on A&M until I see them beat Arkansas by 2 touchdowns.
No, so I meant to jump in there and correct myself. Like, I don't mean to imply, I'm not actually arguing anything you said. Like, I was more just like thinking out loud and like trying to figure out like what I think of the SEC. No, I agree with you all. I think where I'm at with the SEC is I agree there's just no assurances. You know, like normally it's like I know these three teams are good. I mean, I do know Bama and Georgia are good. But yeah, yes. After that, like I don't know. So yeah, it's like A&M might be really good. I just don't know. Florida, shoot. I mean, Florida almost beat Bama. Like, Florida might be, but I still don't
buy it. I don't know. I have no idea what to make of that game. I'm not going to lie. I was at the tailgate. I watched Alabama go up 21-3, and I was like, I'm going to get some food. I don't want to watch this anymore. Like, I know how this ends.
Kind of what I did, too, because that's what I went.
And then all of a sudden, an hour and a half later, like, everybody's like, hey, Florida has a chance to win the game. I was like, what?
No.
Sorry?
I'm with you.
I don't know. I mean... does that mean both of them are worse than we expected, or does it mean that
they're better than the best
team
looks
in the SEC? Yeah. Yeah,
that's the thing. Yeah, I just don't know. And then the same thing. Like Auburn, it's like, hey, shoot, we're just talking about how sometimes like you can't knock a team off because of close loss. So it's like I don't know what I think of Auburn. So I agree with your point, actually. Oh, and then we just left out Ole Miss, who looks like kind of world beaters right now. That's how they actually are. But yeah, they look really good.
I wrote about Matt Corral in the newsletter this week because like he might be the best quarterback in the country. Like it's hard to argue against that right now.
Can I gloat?
Yeah.
Permission to gloat? Not really gloating, but like so I want to say it was end of the season or maybe like first week of February. We did like an SEC writers like roundtable thing, and it was just kind of like the season's over. We're looking ahead to next year. Like what storylines are we watching? What coaching things do we expect to happen? All that stuff. And it ended with like, what is your wild, way too early prediction for what's going to happen in 2021? And this was like really early in the discourse. I was like, I'm going to say Matt Corral wins a Heisman, not because I think he will, but because if he does, like when he looks good, he looks like the best quarterback in the world. When he looks bad, he looks terrible. But it's like, if we see more good, yeah, he's exciting as anything. Like he could absolutely win a Heisman. So I'm just going to gloat at that absurd, stupid pick. Suddenly he's now the Heisman front runner. So I very rarely correct on these things. So I have to draw attention to when I might be.
I mean, I hate to say it, but it looks like Lane's kind of putting it together. I know that they haven't played amazing teams, but like you said,
played good
teams. The Ole Miss LSU game last year, I don't even remember. I'm going to look it up right now, but I feel like it was every possession, it was either Corral was going to throw an interception or a touchdown, no matter what.
Pretty sure he threw 5 interceptions, didn't he?
Yeah.
Was that what it was? Yeah. I mean, it was six.
Six interceptions.
That can't be real. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Yeah, so six like, intercept. And it's like, if we're being honest, if he makes that three, do they win that
no,
game?
No, it was, you know it what was I mean? Five. It was five interceptions.
Ah, okay. So, okay. But yeah, like,
still, right, I mean, the point remains.
If that's three, do they win that game?
Probably.
Or even yes. two? And like, yes. if it seems like he's a quarterback who's less likely to throw five. Yeah. And their defense, again, no one's expecting it to be world beaters, but if it's as good as it's looked at least these few weeks, where it's like, we'll stop, make some stops. They're very, very scary in the SEC West, and that Ole Miss mm-hmm. Bama game next week is going to be chef's kiss incredible. So I love that. And so yeah, anyway, it goes back to like my thesis, and then we can move on to next this week. Is just my thing with the SEC right now is I don't know about anyone, but there still to me feels like six teams that might be top 10 teams. Does that make sense? Like
yeah,
I just don't know. Anyway, so classic Brody cop out. All right, so do we want to move on to state?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Did you get a chance to watch the State Memphis game?
I did not at all, actually, so I would love to hear your thoughts.
I watched some highlights. It is just Mike Leach. I know I've probably mentioned this one before to you that it feels like Mike Leach has taken his Washington State tenure and just like crammed it into a year and a half already. Like, he's saying a lot of stuff about vaccines and weird internet stuff that I'm sure he's reading on some Reddit forum. His teams are A, beating LSU last year, looking insane, and then like cratering, just absolutely yep. like dissolving as a team last year. And then this year they're just doing that. Like, you never know what could happen in a state game. And they probably should have won that game because the referees should have. Did you see the punt return?
Yes. Yes, I did.
I mean, I know that's to the letter of the rule, but like, come on, the ball should have been down. Like, State probably should win that game. But I do think it was illustrative that A, Memphis is a really good G5 team.
Yep.
And Mississippi State is a mediocre at best SEC team.
Yeah. So
I feel comfortable at that. I don't feel like, and maybe this is just because I am a hater from the other side. I don't like, it just feels like that is what Mississippi State is. I don't know if there's a lot of growth there. Or like, this is just what they're going to be. They are Mississippi State. They, you know, they don't have a transcendent quarterback this year. They don't have a lot of transcendent talent. And it's going to be a Mike Leach team. Like, maybe they'll score 74 one week. Maybe they'll score 11. And a good team's going to beat the dirt out of them. And a bad team's going to struggle. And we'll see where LSU falls.
So, what makes evaluating this Mississippi State team so tricky is that they've taken the scheduling style, and I don't know if it was intentional, but it worked out this way this year, that I love, actually, where there is no, like, holy crap marquee non-conference game, but all three have been legitimate top, I don't know, 50, 60 teams in the country. Like, they have played Louisiana Tech, which is always one of the – Skip Holtz always makes them one of the more respectable, you know, group of five schools. NC State, who is a pretty good football team, quite frankly, and Memphis, who obviously has been one of the better G5 teams for years now. So it's like three straight games against teams that are very respectable. And, you know, you and I believe, are both Bill Connolly, you know, SP plus numbers guys. And if you look at his post-game win expectancy, which, you know, is basically a metric of all just data and factors considered, like who should have won that game based on predictable things. 97% against Tech, so even though it was a one-point game, they really controlled it. Even like they outplayed them, I should put it. NC State, 91%, and Memphis in the loss, 93%, which is crazy for that. So like they clearly should have. They point being, Mississippi State is a better team than it might look. And what's tricky about it, Mississippi State, is that it actually hasn't been like we think of them, and we just think power offense, exciting air raid, and all that. I don't trust this offense in the slightest, if I'm being really honest. It's Zach Arnett's defense that actually is the thing that you need to worry about, where they actually, you know, they're 18th in SP plus defensively. They're pretty darn good against the run defensively, which obviously is LSU's weakness. And, you know, they're really good. They allow some big plays, which helps LSU a little bit, but they're pretty good against success rate. You know, they stop you on a play-by-play basis. So it's more like, I'm actually just a little more intrigued by that. Zach Arnett, you may remember, LSU actually interviewed for its defensive coordinator opening, but decided that they didn't think it was quite the right fit. So, right. But I don't know where I feel about NC State, because at least when, like, with an LSU, you saw them play one, we believe, pretty darn good team. And then we also saw what they look like against weaker teams, which in some ways is a better teacher. While Mississippi State, it's three teams that are constantly testing them. So it's like, are their flaws real flaws, or are they just playing quality teams? Or are their strengths real strengths, or are they not quite playing great teams? You can't quite be sure about either. Does that make any sense, or am I rambling like a psychopath?
No. It makes total sense. I hadn't thought about them playing pretty good teams every week. I don't know. I don't trust the man up top, and I
don't either.
It just feels like I look back at every year when Leach would play. You know, it was before Jimmy Lake's tenure kind of really, really went downhill very quickly, if you notice, at Washington.
Yes.
They are just not a good football team. But I loved it. Like, it was like, what is it, 4 or 5 years ago, he was the defensive coordinator at Washington, and they would play the Apple Cup every year, and he would be like, they do the same shit every year, and we defend them the same way, and they beat the crap out of them every year. And I'm like, that's fully formed Mike Leach. Like, can we figure that out? Can we
most
study
teams
like
seem to have.
Can we study 5 Apple Cups and cover a crossing route and like win? This is very much me literally speaking from my kitchen on a microphone, so I'm not but like
sometimes I love that to just set perspective. Like, yeah, why are you listening to us?
but at the same time, like I hope we can figure it out. I hope Durante Jones can figure it out. The pressure's on. I mean, this is kind of nicely transition into a point of anxiety I wrote on our show rundown, where I'll just read what I wrote. You know what I don't like? Feeling like every upcoming game is insanely important for a program that feels on the brink. Am I crazy for thinking that?
No. I think that's well put, because I mean, this is really the first game we're going to get any actual sense of what we think. Like we said, first games are hard. Also, UCLA is a pretty good team. Then these two games, you're not going to make much of the positives, all that. So it's like we're finally figuring out what it is. And there are, as much as we talk about we don't know how good the top of the SEC is, I do actually feel like there are no bad teams in the SEC West anymore. Like literally none. LSU might be the baddies. And that's the tough thing. So no, you're absolutely right. And it's going to make this so fascinating is that, again, we're going to learn a lot about Durante Jones for all the reasons you just said about, can you adjust to a Mike Leach offense? Can you prepare for it and see the data that's clearly been out there for all these years? You're absolutely right about it. That's going to tell us a lot. But what and it goes back to my thing about them actually, their defense is more interesting to me than their offense is. I don't know. LSU's defense overall probably still rates better than its offense. Again, they did just lose Andre Anthony, all that. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to mention that at the end. But the defense as a whole to me, they gave up a garbage time coverage bust against Central Michigan. Overall, I'm sorry. I think the defense looked good the last 2 weeks.
They did.
So I'm not out on this defense, but I still have no idea what to think of Durante Jones. So you're going to find a lot about him against Mississippi State. But what's really, really going to, I think, decide this game, because I have a feeling LSU's defense will hold its own here. What's going to tell us this game is, do you buy what LSU's offense showed against Central Michigan? Because Mississippi State, as much as I just said, their defense is pretty solid. The one thing they don't do well is they allow I'm mixing up my thoughts here. I'm actually back to the defense. Wow, brutal moment there for the Broadster. Mississippi State.
Go on, it's fine. Right,
Brody, get together. Mississippi State's offense moves the ball. Success rate's high, all that stuff. They move the ball, but they are not explosive. So if you are making a case for what LSU is going to be this year, or for what they're going to do, this LSU is a brutal explosiveness allowed defense. They allow, even their success rates are actually pretty good. They just allow explosive play after explosive play. That is exactly what Mississippi State does not threaten you with right now. So if you believe in what LSU's defense has shown, you actually should believe that they should be able to contain Mississippi State's defense, because they don't put the ball behind you that often. So it all really comes down to, and I'm sorry for the wild journey there, it really will come down to, do you believe in what you saw from LSU's offense Saturday? Because if that's true, I think that's their chance for winning it. They need the offense to step up.
I think I do, to be honest, especially against maybe a middling defense. And I know they've allowed a lot of yards, but like you said, they've played some good teams. I don't know. I saw, no matter the opponent, I did see some confidence this weekend. I saw, it, like you said, it was nice to, Max saw one-on-one coverage and pulled, and he threw the ball. There wasn't a lot of stress. There wasn't a lot of worry. Yep. I mean, my worry in the moment was if he does that, willy-nilly against a good defense, some of those balls might get picked off. I mean, not to burst a bubble here, but the pass to Deion Smith was underthrown. Like, a good DB picks that off, and Deion reached over and said, mine, and pulled it back. So, shout out to Deion Smith for that. But I hope he has that confidence going in. I hope that the, let's go back to the theme of this podcast so far. I hope the offensive line protects him. Like, I feel like you saw against UCLA what pressure did to him, and I hope it was a great learning moment for him. Like I told you, like, after that week one, that I felt bad for him because everybody was going to be like, oh my God, these stupid throws that you made, like the behind the back pass. And like, he's a smart kid. I'm sure he knows that, but I don't want him seeing ghosts back there. I don't want to regress. So that's what I'm looking for. I think if they protect Max, I think LSU should be fine.
But what's your confidence level there?
I don't know. That's the thing. I couldn't even tell you a number because they did look good against Central Michigan. We just don't have the data on quote unquote new LSU slash LSU that has learned from its mistakes against UCLA, against the UCLA team that we don't even know how good they are. It's just, it's all kind of wide open. I like to think that they're going to be healthy enough and the focus is going to be there. I mean, we can kind of go into what I was saying about the program on the brink and specifically its head coach. Like I keep saying, Ed Ogeron's calling card is A, recruiting, and B, motivation. Like, people want to run through a wall for him. This is the time. This is when he has to do it, because if it's a loss, oh, it feels bad for Ed. It feels real bad for Ed if we lose two straight years in Mississippi State and you start the season 2-2. It doesn't feel great.
With two losses against the only two good teams you would have played. Yeah.
Doesn't feel wonderful. So I would like to think that Ed Ogeron has that team ready to run through a wall, and maybe they go up 28-0 and I'm feeling great, but I need to see it. I hope I see it. I have no idea.
Yeah. And it's going to tell us so much. It's going to be the first week in a long time where they're pretty healthy. You know, they're not going to still have like Len Logan, Andre Anthony's out, but still like Jay Ward should be back. Armani Goodwin should be back. Actually, Jay Ward's still pretty up in the air, but I have a gut feeling he'll be back. Yeah. So you're going to have a lot of those guys healthier. That's Ollie Gay. Sorry, is that a big one?
Yeah.
It's going to tell us a lot more. It's tough because, yeah, if they lose, and again, I am not here talking about like fire at Ogeron or what I think. I don't know. But if you lose, it just sets a slippery slope of, okay, let's you know, to keep using Bill Connolly's metrics and all that, this one is literally a toss-up. I think it's a 51% Mississippi State, 49% LSU win right now. It's like a 0.4 projected margin. Like, it's a toss-up. So if you lose this, though, all right, 44% chance against Auburn, according to this, 59% against Kentucky, 33% against Florida, 30% against Ole Miss, 14% obviously against Bama. Arkansas is only 57%. UL Monroe's a win, and then A&M's 34%. Like, if you're looking at their odds using these analytics of finishing with X amount of wins, their most likely scenario is 6 wins. Like, and if you lose this, it kind of confirms that in a lot of ways, and it sets a slippery slope of, all right, if you lose this, do you really think you beat Auburn? If you lose this with how Kentucky's offense has looked lately and how they actually have really looked like a good team, and yes, they're always one of the biggest pain-in-the-ass teams in the SEC to play because they're so well-coached on the road, do you feel good about that? It's like, what game in the world do you point to where you're sure about it? And that's what it's scary. It's not like you can't lose this and then still go 8-4. I totally think you can.
Right.
Like, you're talented enough, but it's more like, if you lose this, what does it say? And I think that is just the scary part. Ed Ogeron's not going to get fired or anything like that because he loses to Mississippi State, but it's going to set a huge chain of events.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. $5. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The storm clouds will come a-brewing, and, you know, your words directly to my anxious heart, because it's not going to be fun after that. I'm like, because you said, like, the rest of the SEC is decently good. LSU doesn't play any bad teams. LSU's not playing Vanderbilt this year. They get to go to a really good Kentucky team that has a Mark Stoops head coach that will probably get hired somewhere big unless Kentucky decides to really value football.
They have, man. They've poured in resources, yeah.
I know. But, like, I feel like he's going to be on the shortlist for any big job in the country this year because of the job he's done there. So, a little scary. But I still feel okay about this weekend. I feel like every time Coach O has been on the mat, he at least has the guys fired up. And like you said, I mean, the talent is there. That's what I keep coming back to. The talent is there. Now, are you developing it well? Are you putting them in the right spots to succeed? Maybe. We'll see. But I got to feel like those guys are going to be fired up. And I like our chances against Mike Leach. That's all. Like, no matter what happened last year was a disaster. But I still like our chances against a Mike Leach coach team. Not going to lie.
And yeah, and again, this is a lazy outlook, but I think it can sometimes be the most informative way to look at things is, okay, if, you know, we use the word talent and all that, and we've discussed before how it can be a flawed way to talk about things, but if LSU is more talented and their experience, all that, if LSU shows up in a way they're capable of, they should win this game. So, and again, that's no shit Sherlock, again, my new catchphrase today, but still, there's a way of viewing that of if you lose, it's telling you more about what's wrong with LSU than it's telling you how great Mississippi State is. I do actually kind of believe that. So it's like, there is something informative about it, because if LSU wins, it means, hey, they probably are starting to get some things rolling, and if they lose, it means there are real problems. It means that things just haven't been figured out. And that is kind of, I think, an informative way of thinking about this game, is this is the 50-50 game. Arguably the only, like, again, if you believe some of these analytics and all that, the only true 50-50 game on the schedule left. So it's like, this is the decision game. This is the tell you what's the reality game. And that's what makes this so fascinating. It's on the road, so it's going to tell us anything about that. And my gut tells me LSU wins. It does, but my brain doesn't. So, my brain tells me Mississippi State might know what they're doing a little bit more. So, I don't know. What is your final pick?
Well, I was going to
tell you. You don't give a score, but.
Yeah. No. I was going to tell you a terrible simile thing that I have going on.
Oh, I love a good simile.
Have you ever bought a bad watermelon?
I don't buy watermelon often. I know that just ruined your moment. Should I have lied there?
No, it's okay. It's fine.
Yeah,
like, right. you walk by the watermelons at the grocery store. The grocery store has spritzed them up with some water to make them look better than they are. They're looking great. It's the summer. It's hot. You want a watermelon. But, like, you don't know if it's good until you get home and actually slice into it. And then watermelons are usually pretty big. So you slice into it, and it's mealy and gross. And it's a huge bummer. You have this huge thing to throw in the trash can. Nobody's going to like it. But a beautifully ripe, crisp watermelon is wonderful. And I still feel like I haven't sliced into the watermelon yet. I don't know.
Okay. I love that. I know where you're going to go with that. I think you landed it.
My first bite of the season was bad, but, you know, maybe it was just the end. Maybe it was just the rind that is not going to taste good anyway, and we haven't gotten to the center. So I'm hoping LSU's ripe.
That was a great, man. Love that. I might steal that. No, I think that's just a really good way to put it. And it's just, I'm going to repeat myself for the 1,000th time here, but it's the first time we will learn what this team actually is.
Here's what I think is going to happen, Brody, and it's good and bad. I think LSU wins the game. I think it is dumb. I think there's going to be some shenanigans. I don't feel like I'm going to come out of this game feeling like, man, 5-3 in the SEC, like things are on track, but it's going to be a win. It's going to be some 37-35 win where somebody does something stupid to lose the game. And then we're going to go through the cycle over and over again until LSU plays a really good team in Auburn. So I do think it'll be a win because I don't think last year's going to happen. And, you know, it's funny to look back at last year's game. And for all the yards that State put up, it was still, what, a one possession game?
Yeah.
On LSU's worst team in a long time. So I know Miles was playing quarterback and he made a lot of good throws and they still had Terrace and they still had all these people that, oh, you got to hear my doorbell there. Congrats. But I do think that LSU pulls it out. I don't know if I'll feel as good. I don't know if I'll find out if the watermelon is ripe, but I do think LSU pulls it out. Do you agree with me?
I do think LSU pulls it out, and you're kind of convincing me because I keep saying, like, you know, we're going to find out LSU is. You're probably actually right because I feel like the Mississippi State game, next to maybe Auburn, is like the one game every year where it's just like it's not indicative of what other – like it's just kind of like a street fight. It's not the right word. That's a bit of an overused cliche, but it's like stuff just happens. And like you play – like I feel like Mississippi State, we've seen LSU a few times – they play almost like more conservative in a way. And there's just like a physicality to it and things like that. Like I remember 2019 when they had the best offense like ever. There was still like kind of a conservative run the ball game play in that game and all that.
It was.
So like, yeah. So I kind of like what you're saying here. I like that prediction. So part of me says it'll be like a 31-23 LSU win. Like they never run away with it, but they're kind of in control and like one of those. And the defense makes some big plays. I will predict LSU to win, and just for the fun of it, I'll say they cover the three, I believe, point spread.
They're favored by three?
LSU? Yes. Yes.
I'd take the Tigers on that. I would. I would be nervous about it the whole game because...
Well, that like, this, the honest answer is you stay the hell away from this game, sir. You do not bet this game.
No. I do not bet the Tigers. That is not a thing that I even want to subject myself to, so... You never want to feel like you are sad in an LSU win if they don't cover a point spread. That's not my philosophy. So
I do feel like the under is the move. I feel like it opened at 57 or 56. I feel like the under is the move here. I think people just haven't quite accepted that Mississippi State's defense is good. Like they just don't understand that. And
what
also,
what I'm not going to do is bet an under on a team that I care about.
That
like
is
the
smartest rule in the world, actually.
Oh, stop. Please stop scoring points.
Yes. Well, yeah. And again, there's the whole thing. Yeah. I bet a lot of unders in this world because
that
no one else wants them.
Degenerate shit.
I bet a lot of them because nobody likes betting them. So you tend to get good numbers on them. That's the actual truth. But yeah, you never, but still, you don't want to watch the game when you have an under because who wants to enjoy that? So yeah,
nope,
definitely not when you're rooting for your own team. And then we wanted to end it just by quickly, really quickly, we'll let you guys go. Just mentioning Andre Anthony, right? And I'll say this. He's a guy who, I mean, Andre Anthony obviously is out for the season. And I have a piece up today at The Athletic, you know, basically just talking about how sad of a situation this is and just in what's next and all that. And you can read that to figure out what's next and all that. But it's just a sad story because he's a guy who academically ineligible in 2016. That's right. He's going to turn 25 this season, by the way. It's
crazy.
Academically ineligible in 16. Then finally comes back, injures his foot and misses all of 17. Then Kalavon goes down for all of 18. You think like, oh, Andre Anthony will step up. And he just doesn't. He's struggling as a 3-4 outside linebacker. Same thing in 19. Just really doesn't have a role. So that's 4 years into his career. Then 2020, he finally gets his chance and quite frankly plays pretty solid football, but the defense is just historically bad. And right now this year is playing his best football. Four sacks, a scoop and score touchdown on Saturday. The leader of the defense, like everything is turning up Andre Anthony, a guy who like T-Bob and I used to call like the that guy all-stars because it would be like you would just like list guys as like, oh yeah, Andre Anthony, Ray Thornton. Yeah, like they're there for depth too. You know, like, you just mention them, but like they're never going to do anything. And he proved me wrong. So it's just sad to kind of see this ending for him.
I agree. I mean, he is 25 because I was looking back at it and he was in the 2016 recruiting class.
It's bonkers. I believe he'll turn 25 in November. And also he was exploring options for him to come back. So he might be a 26-year-old college football player.
Okay, so that was going to be my last thing because you covered that very well. I don't have much to add to just say I'm sad about it because, you know, that was a great play in the stadium on Saturday too. Stingley knocks it loose. Andre brings it back. It was like, the defense is here. They're making shit happen. Like, it was cool. So after all that, I feel bad for him. He posted that Instagram that is in the same format of guys who are going to the league or who are saying bye. Like, I understand that he's addressing people. So are you telling me that LSU is looking into bringing him back for another year, seeing if it's possible?
I think it's unlikely, but yeah, I've especially now that COVID has thrown the ultimate wrench in it, I'm officially just giving up on understanding who, like, eligibility, because
does he want to?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's the whole other thing. It's like, do you want to come? It's like the Miles Brennan thing. It's like, do you want to come back for year seven? But yeah, I don't know. I mean, he was playing good football. Who knows? Like, but so I would assume he's not back. I'm just saying, yeah, he uses academic redshirt, like, he redshirted because of academics. But then the second one was medical, but like, it didn't technically count as a redshirt year. But like, maybe you can argue it was and all that. And this is obviously going to be a medical one. And it's just like, and then COVID obviously doesn't count against 2020, doesn't count against eligibility at all, which is why he's back this year. But still, I just genuinely don't know. And I'm admitting ignorance, but LSU has said they are looking into options. That's all I have information. But I would assume his career is over.
Well, keep tabs on that for me, beat writer.
Thanks, buddy.
Well, I do say I'm really sad for him. I know that he was just coming into his own. So that's a bummer. I hope LSU's defense. I mean, and outside of the emotional part, LSU's got to fill that hole. Like, he's a good player on a really good defense, or I don't want to say really good, but he was a really good player on a defense that needed really good players. So it's going to be interesting. Can't wait to be super stressed this weekend. 11 a.m. Mimosa kickoff. I don't know how I feel about that. I'm sure you're thrilled that you'll have.
Absolutely thrilled, especially because I stay in Jackson for both, like, the Mississippi school games, because there's just impossible to get a hotel in those small college towns.
Right.
So it means I don't have to, like, be driving home at 2 in the morning. Yeah, I'm pretty happy.
Well, I guess I'm happy for you, Brody, but you know, I like my night games or afternoon games, whatever.
You'll still get them at home. It's a road game. You'll live.
I guess. Well, I hope LSU wins. Brody, last question for you. This is a bonus for people. What kind of wedding guy are you?
Oh, so I'm still, like, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm kind of new to weddings still a little bit because, like, you know, I just turned 27. Like, most of my friends haven't gotten married yet. And, like, most of my family weddings, I was young. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm still, like, a bit of a wedding rookie. And I'm not going to lie, man. I actually, like, turned to Claire at one point, my girlfriend, and just said, like, I think this is my home. This is my element, man. I work the room like a master. I'm just like a morale guy. Like, I'll see, like, Aunt Kathy sitting over alone at a table, and I'm like, I am just going to go talk to her for 5 minutes. And then I'm just killing it with jokes with her. And then I'll be like, oh, song comes on. All right, Claire, let's go do a slow dance. You know, and just like, I am the morale guy. I was like, because I was the one guy, like, in the family who wasn't, like, in the wedding party. So I was, like, kind of operating as, like, the what extra duty do you need, because I know you guys are about to melt down with stress. So I was like, the helpful clubhouse guy, like the utility man who's just like, yeah, I'll go grab that for you. So I was just, I think I'm the morale guy. I really feel like I thrived in that setting, and I think I want to go to more weddings now. If you want to invite me to your wedding, it's only a $2,000 a wedding fee, and I will come entertain. But what kind of wedding guy
are you? That's cheap.
I appreciate it.
I was just going to say, you sound like Bruce Bowen for the Spurs hitting threes in the corner. Like, do we need a guy to pass out to while we worry about our intro dances? Like, and you're just hitting jokes from the corner.
Yeah. Like, you're not building your team around me. Of course not. But you're going to look back on a 31 win season the year I go to free agency, and you're like, ah, shoot. Yeah. I think we kind of needed him. And I think that's who I am. Yeah.
Big trade deadline acquisition, Bernie Miller, wedding guest.
It's kind of what I was at this wedding, so I love that. Yeah. Who are you at weddings?
I am kind of the same guy. I was going to say,
we have similar demeanors, man. We're both.
Yeah, weddings. But it's so fascinating that you haven't been to a wedding before. Or, like,
I've been to weddings. Just
I know, not, like, many, because, like, you're about to enter the zone. I'm about to turn 32, and, like, I mean, COVID was its own thing, but it is a spate. So get ready. You're gonna hone that. I'm the same guy. It's interesting. People get worried about getting too drunk at weddings, or, you know, imbibing too much. And to me, I'm always dancing so much and I'm moving around the room so much that it just all, like, sweats out of me at some point, especially in New Orleans, where it's like,
I'm glad you said that.
I'm getting a drink and I'm like, do I even feel this? Like, I've had 7 drinks and I don't feel it.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. It's like, I was so active. Yeah. Well put. I was so active that actually I'm like, again, not really like talking about boozing, like we're out, like, but it's like, I didn't feel like I actually drank that much because like I actually was just like doing stuff. And yeah, so I think you nailed it. Yeah. I think that's kind of where I'm at. So maybe the note is, do we need to drink more at weddings?
You know what? That's a slippery slope. Let's not do that.
Yeah, I don't want to like put that on. I don't want that in the transcript because that'll be thrown back in my face at a later date. But it's in the back of my mind. I don't know.
You'll figure it out. You know, just like Durante Jones and Jake Peets. You know, you're figuring out your guys. You're figuring out your players. You're figuring out your moves. Figuring out your best coverages. And you're gonna get better going forward, wedding to wedding. You know, you got to put your head down. You got to watch the tape, and you got to learn from it.
That reminds me, another quick thing. I feel like my strategy is don't dance a lot, but really own the show in the few moments you dance. What?
Disagree. Like, disagree.
You just want to be just on the floor all night.
You got to own the floor. Yeah.
I think I know there's like a limitation on one, my stamina, and two, my overall arsenal of moves and abilities on the floor aren't that great. So it's like, it's not a deep rotation. So I'm just like, I'm going to have like 30, not literally 30, but you know, like a few main songs where I am just showing out and then go to the bullpen in the sixth inning with one hit. You know, that's me.
That's not a bad way to do. Look, you have a good game plan going for it. I have faith in you.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Yeah. Mimosa game on Saturday. I'm sure I will nervously text you during the game and see you next week. Please do.